Good afternoon. This is Paul Kelly. I'm your host on today's world tour. I want to thank you for joining us today. Oh, this is not world tour. That's not Sunday. This is Speak Up Arkansas. What am I talking about? But I'm there too. So again, Speak Up Arkansas, this is a place where we want to learn about and share the experiences of the people who are impacted by policies and practices and programs that are enacted by our elected officials and also implemented by public officials, and whether they have a positive or negative effect on real people in the community. It's time to hold our political leaders accountable. The legislature is in session. And we're going to try to find out what they're doing to or for all those who are often overlooked by the broader community, and we hope to help you understand and act when you feel inclined to do so, to not just vote them into office or try to vote somebody in the office, but also do something else by contacting them in an appropriate time. So today, I want to remind you we're going to be talking about the legislative session. We're going to entertain phone calls and emails. You can contact us with a question or comment by email by going to speakupar@gmail.com. Or you can call us at 501-433-0088. So we're going to start today with a look at the regular session. Again, like the ad just said, it's more than 600 bills I'm sure have been filed since I did that ad. But we got a lot going on, and I'd like to first let me introduce who we've got on the air with us here. We have Tom Maysall, who is with the Disability Rights Arkansas. Executive Director. We have Ellie Wheeler with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. She is the Senior Policy Analyst for Tax and Budget. We've got the Education Policy Director, Jenny Blankenship, from Arkansas Advocates, and the Health Policy Director at Arkansas Advocates, Marquita Little. So thank all of you all for joining us. Are y'all ready to get going?
Yep, we're ready.
All right. Well, Ellie, can we start with you?
Sure.
I know, like, when we talk about things, we always want to point out that you can't do any of the stuff we need to do without money, and that has to do with budget and taxes. So what's going on?
There are certainly a lot of things going on with tax and budget. This legislative session, we have so many bills related to taxes and ideas for tax cuts, and one of the biggest news items is that today, the governor signed his $50 million low-income tax cut plan, and that is especially significant because it is designed to help the lowest income, just like it says. It is a low-income tax plan. It gives a break to people making less than $21,000 a year, and what's really important about that is that the way our tax code is structured right now is that those lowest income earners are the ones that do pay a much higher state and local taxes. When you put everything together, sales tax, property tax, income tax, and all that, the lowest income people in our state pay twice the rate as a share of their income compared to the top 1%. So what's really great about this plan is that it does go towards improving that imbalance in our tax system. There was another bill that we have been working really hard on at Arkansas Advocates for many years now. It's kind of an alternative to that plan that the governor just signed today. Both are great bills that do help low-income families. The EITC died on the House floor last week, and it would have been a little bit more targeted. I won't go into the nerdy details, but it would have been more targeted towards those low-income people instead of being spread out a little bit more into the middle and upper income ranges. That earned income tax credit Like I said, died on the House floor last week, but we're still really, you know, frankly, I'm excited that we're discussing the best way to help low-income families this time around, because it was a very different discussion during the 2015 session. We were talking more about how to help upper-income folks, and I'm cautiously optimistic about the way the discussions are going about tax cuts at the Capitol this session. And of course, it's early. We have a long way to go. There's room for change, but this is a great start, and I'm really excited about it. Another thing that's important to note about the governor's low-income tax cut plan is that it does include the formation of a tax reform relief legislative task force. And so a lot of people have been talking about that. There's a lot of excitement about what that means. I think the idea is to kind of take a more comprehensive look at our tax system and possibly open things up for some bigger change instead of doing it, you know, little by little like we sometimes do in the legislative session, to perhaps take a broader look at reworking our tax code. So we'll certainly be keeping an eye on that as well.
Well, and it sounds like the earned income tax credit might be something that's talked about with that committee.
Indeed. So, yes, we will be keeping an eye on what the conversations are that are covered in that legislative task force, and certainly hoping that an earned income tax credit would be included in the changes that are proposed there.
We need to give Representative Warwick Sabin a shout out for his hard work on that.
That's right.
A great job fielding questions and answering things. So it was a great effort. You know, it's all incremental. So
that's right.
All right. Well, another important issue that's been going on for the full history of the state, and that's education. Jenny, you want to talk a little bit about what's going on in that realm right now?
Hey, Paul. We've actually gotten off to a pretty slow start on education issues so far. I'm afraid that what that may end up meaning is that we will end with quite a bang towards the end of the session, hopefully not a bust. But I'll highlight just a couple of things that Arkansas Advocates have been tracking since they've been filed and referred to either the House or Senate Education Committee. One of those bills will be on the House Committee on Education's agenda tomorrow. It is House Bill 1155, which would amend the minimum teacher compensation schedule. So they would give a minimum of $400 within the teacher salary schedule for all teachers in the state, and that was decided as part of the biennial adequacy process that the Joint Education Committee just wrapped up last fall. So is that enough for our teachers? No, but $400 is where it stands now, and it is quite likely to pass the committee tomorrow.
All right.
Another bill that we are keeping an eye on is House Bill 1222. This was sponsored by Representative Dodson. It's called the Arkansas Parental Empowerment for Education Choice Act of 2017. And to declare an emergency. Sometimes you'll see that language at the end of a bill. It doesn't actually mean that things will catch on fire if the bill does not pass. It just means that if it is approved by the legislature and signed by the governor, that it will go into effect immediately instead of the default 90 days after the session concludes. So back to House Bill 1222. What it would do would create education savings accounts that could be used to pay for a variety of educational things, which sounds pretty good in theory, until you read the fine print of the 18-page bill. And one of those things that the money could go for is private school tuition. That might not be such a big deal if the fiscal impact statement of that bill were not up to $10 million in the first year alone. So not only are we concerned about the potential transfer of lots of money from general revenue to private schools, which are not held to the same accountability standards as our public schools are, That would have a huge impact on general revenue overall. So we are keeping a close eye on that. It's already had a couple of amendments. It's on the House Education Committee's agenda for tomorrow, but I have a feeling that they might wait another week to actually run the bill. One last thing I'll mention is, it sounds like a similar bill, but Senate Bill 111, sponsored by Senator Jane English, would allow an income tax deduction for qualifying education expenses. And in that language, originally, it also included private school tuition, but I believe that there have been some conversations going on behind the scenes, and Senator English is still working on that language to mitigate any concerns that might arise in a similar way to the other school voucher bill that I was just talking about. So that one's still in process. Probably won't run this week, so we'll keep an eye on it next week. And then we're still waiting for some positive news about pre-K funding and potential funding for after-school and summer programs. That's one of our top priorities for the past several years, so we will keep you posted.
All right. Marquita. Marquita, our health policy person. Now, that's a topical discussion that's been had all over the country, and I know it has implications right here in Arkansas. So kind of I would like for you to go over again, at least introduce the progress we've made before we start talking about what might happen to undo some of that.
Sure. That's a really good place to start, Paul, and a hopeful place to start. So one of the things that I talked about and previously on the show was really the starting point where we are, and so the great progress that we've made in the state in improving the healthcare system. We have a fantastic Our Kids First program that provides coverage for children in the state. And because of that program and the investments we made in outreach and getting those kids enrolled, we are at an all-time low when we look at the rates of uninsured kids in the state. Over 95% of kids in our state are covered. We've made similar progress more recently with adult coverage because we took advantage of a federal option to expand coverage for low-income adults in the state. And so that's a lot of the debate that's happening right now at the federal level around the conversation around repealing the Affordable Care Act or repealing Obamacare. That would impact our ability to continue that program that helped us, again, lead the nation in dropping the rates of uninsured adults. So that's kind of the place where we're starting. When it comes to the state legislative session, we've actually not seen a lot of state bills yet that will directly impact that. A couple of, one I'll say that's a pretty significant issue, that a bill that was introduced and passed through the committee certainly really quickly, was to address an ongoing problem in the state for Arkansans who have disabilities, who many of whom are on a waiting list to receive access to services that allow them to receive the treatment and care that they need in their home or in their community. That waiting list has been up to about, if not slightly over, 3,000 people who basically have no alternatives in many cases except facility-based care. So a bill was introduced that basically takes some money that we once used to provide a limited benefits package for low-income adults who now, because we expanded coverage, have access to a different type of coverage through Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. We have some leftover money in the state, and they were able to divert that money to actually reduce the waiting list. So it's still an ongoing issue. It's an estimated that 500 to 900 people will be able to get access to those services. So we still have work to do, but that was a huge step in the right direction. But you can kind of see the connection to some of the decisions that we are going to be making in the future about how we continue to provide care and what could be happening at the federal level. And I'm certainly happy to do a quick overview of all of the interesting discussion that's been happening at the federal level the last couple of weeks.
Well, first of all, I think we ought to acknowledge that Our Kids First is what, 30 years?
It is 20 years old. 1997, we passed legislation to allow even more families to get their kids enrolled. And here we are 20 years out.
Uh-huh. And we were one of the first in the country to start this before the federal government.
Absolutely. We were a few months ahead of the federal government. It's a bipartisan support, and Governor Huckabee at the time led the charge, and we were able to extend coverage to working families in the state.
Well, give us a little bit of some of the what's going on in the on the national level, just so people get a sense of it.
Sure. So here's my couple seconds overview. So a lot of activity at the federal level. Folks have been kind of waiting and watching to see what happened once President Trump was in office. And so some things have been happening really quickly. It changes every day. But basically, some of the big things that we've seen happen just in the last couple of weeks. So first, at the federal level, Congress has taken the first steps towards repealing the Affordable Care Act. So we know that the law, as we know it today, is going to change. The big question that still remains is what are they going to replace the Affordable Care Act with? There is no plan on the table, and in the previous 6 years that that's been discussed, repealing it, there has not been an acceptable option that's been put forth. So the other thing that's happening is we actually are starting to see some conversation happening and some developing of some potential plans to replace the ACA. And so more of that will probably be coming in the weeks to follow. And then the other big thing that happened is President Trump actually signed an executive order that essentially basically supports the moving forward with repealing the Affordable Care Act. And although that is an executive order from the president, there's still a regulatory process that you have to go through to repeal any federal law. So that doesn't mean it's going to change immediately. There's still going to be more details at what happens at the federal level. And a lot of those decisions will definitely impact the Arkansas healthcare system.
Right. And we don't know yet what kind of say or that the state itself will have, but this is likely, if you're worried about the national level, call your senators and representatives, but to make sure the state does what it's supposed to do.
Absolutely.
Should it be given a chance, talk to the governor, right?
And I'll tell you one way that I described it to a group of folks that I was talking with the other day is that the federal rules kind of give us the guardrails. And those guardrails give us kind of the framework for what we can do in our state. And so the federal decisions that are made kind of change those guardrails. They may move it out a little bit bigger, squeeze them in a little bit tighter, but that's why that's so important. We still have the ability to make certain state decisions, but where those guardrails are set at the federal level are really important.
All right. Again, reminding you, you can send us a email at speakupar@gmail.com to ask our panel any questions, or you can call us at 501-433-0088. Ellie, I don't know, one of the things that you work on is not only just the tax and budget, but also issues about economic security. Are there issues coming up in the legislature now that deal with that in a way that folks need to be paying attention to?
Sure. One of the things that we've been advocating for at Arkansas Advocates for is paid leave and increased access to paid leave.
Ooh. Hang on just a second. Good afternoon.
Thank you for taking my call. First, I want to tell you what a great service I think you're providing having this hour on on the radio. I've become very informed about lots of issues, and of course this one also. Last week I tried to call and make some comments. I was waiting for the speakers to finish, and then I didn't get a chance. So if anybody else wants to call in, you might not want to wait till they're done, because there might not be any time left. Anyway, I just wanted to say that I work for a state agency, which will remain anonymous, and I had to pass, get legislation passed, and I also had to deal with budget issues, you know, and that time was every 2 years. And I saw how, you know, things are done, how bills are introduced, and we had watchdog people over there, all the agencies did, but like you said, you have an organization, or there is an organization that also watches about these bills being filed, but sometimes they're filed in a manner to go under the radar, mm-hmm. and before you know it, wham, bam, there's something passed that affects, you know, many people, maybe an agency or something like that. Our agency's budget's already also been held up to the last day of the session, just to kind of, you know, teach the director a lesson and things like that. But like one of the things I found out was that I was having trouble getting AT&T to release my number to another provider. Couldn't get any help from AT&T anywhere. Spent, you know, weeks on doing that. I called down the Public Service Commission to the director, and he said, "Well, we don't regulate AT&T any longer. There was a bill passed in the several sessions ago that took them out from underneath our regulation." So when you have things like that, you know, I would consider that to be important to a lot of people, and it just slipped through somehow, and we just have to be vigilant on these sorts of things, and it's hard with the volunteer staff and things like that. So I'll just I'll stop talking and let you all continue.
Thank you. You know, thank you for calling, sir. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. So, yeah, I know, especially budget decisions, those are generally not even discussed in committees. They are, Marquita, anybody want to talk about that? Or?
Well, I have a comment just on...
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up.
I think that was a great comment, and I'd just like to say that sometimes things do get snuck into bills, and that's why, you know, sometimes people think that tax and budget is the boring issue, but you can very easily hide some pretty nasty stuff in with the boring stuff that no one bothers to read. And so that's why we're here, and we do our best to read through every bill that comes through, and there are thousands, but we read them, and we're looking out for stuff like that, and we do our best to make sure that things like that are, when they're important, that people are aware of it.
Yeah, some of the wording on the bills is not having anything to do whatsoever with what's in the bill. It's something that would make it sound good. So you do have to read, and some of them are quite long. So any other comments to that? Or?
No, I agree with all of the comments that were made. I mean, you have to read them. You have to monitor them. But we try to make it a little bit easier. We send out the weekly updates. We try to tell people what's been filed. But, wow, it's a full-time job just trying to keep up in legislative session. One of the ones that's always interesting to me, Paul, to your example about the title and the budget bills, there's always two budget bills that deal with Medicaid. And one is basically Medicaid expansion appropriation bill. And the other one is just the Division of Medical Services. And so to the average reader, you would think the Medicaid expansion bill has something to do with our Medicaid expansion program for low-income adults. Has absolutely nothing to do with that. It's an old program where we are providing coverage to pregnant women, long-term care, and a bunch of other populations. But then the regular Medicaid program is in a completely different budget bill. And so that one just always, it's always bothered me just a little. But that's an example of one of those instances where you really don't know what's being discussed and what the impact is unless you actually have the ability to sit down and read through all of it. But as Ellie said, that's what we're here for.
Uh-huh. Ellie, you were talking about, we talked about economic security.
Sure.
You want to finish with any thoughts on that?
Sure. Thanks, Paul. I just wanted to mention that there are two paid leave bills out right now, SB 125 and HB 1046. And both of them would improve access to paid maternity leave in Arkansas for state employees, and that's really great. We don't really know what the outcome is going to be for either bill right now. HB 1046 would provide a little bit longer of time period for state employees to have access to paid leave. SB 125 is 4 weeks of paid leave, and it uses the catastrophic leave bank. That's the bank of days that if you don't use all of your vacation days, you can donate them to a common bank that can be used for catastrophic purposes for other employees. So it would pool all of those days and allow state employees to draw from that bank of days for paid maternity leave purposes.
Right. So they don't have that now.
That's right. So state employees, as it currently stands, don't have access to paid maternity leave.
All right. Well, again, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
A boy who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. And heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Lord, won't you help us all?
Mm-hmm. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns his back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has to crawl. Heaven help us all.
The boy who won't reach 21.
You tell him, Ray.
And heaven help the man who gave that child a gun.
Shame, shame.
And heaven help the people with their backs against the wall. Lord, won't you help us all?
All right, let's get back to Speak Up Arkansas, and God help us all. The legislature is in session, and we're here to talk about it, so you'll know what your legislators are up to and maybe can hold them accountable. And one of the great organizations in this state is Disability Rights. And Tom, I'd like you to talk a little bit about your agency and kind of who they are and what they do, and then talk what you'd like, and then say what you'd like to say about the legislature. But for folks who aren't familiar with you.
Okay. Well, Paul, thank you for having me on the phone or on the radio program today. So Disability Rights Arkansas is a private nonprofit organization. We advocate for individuals with disabilities throughout the state of Arkansas. Every state and territory has an agency similar to ours. And the whole mission is to ensure individuals with disabilities understand their rights given to them under the law. And our whole focus is to ensure that they understand those rights and they can become advocates for themselves. And so one of the things that we do is we provide information referral. We provide case-level services. We look at policies and provide comments. We also go out into the community and monitor places where individuals live. So we frequently go out to the human development centers across the state, juvenile treatment centers, psychiatric facilities, group homes, workshops, all with the purpose of ensuring that individuals are receiving appropriate services, that they're free from abuse and neglect and exploitation. Mm-hmm. So that is essentially what we do. We're statewide. All of our services are free. some of the issues that we've been focused on rather closely is the youth who are in the Division of Youth Services custody and those who are residing at the juvenile treatment centers. We've been monitoring those facilities since 2014. And what we're finding is that the conditions and services that ought to be provided in those facilities are not being done. We recently issued a letter expressing our concerns to the state over those issues. You know, we focused on education, the lack of education services being provided in those facilities, the therapy issues, the lack of staffing, the conditions in general. We also looked at transition services or the lack thereof, as well as the use of restraints and or shackles for the youth. And so we've been following this issue since 2014, talking with the state, trying to ensure policies are changed, that the youth in their custody are receiving appropriate services. And at this point, we really haven't seen major changes in the way we provide services to the youth.
But you're keeping the pressure on, which is what has to be done.
Yes, we're keeping the pressure on. You know, we continue to issue reports and talk with legislators and talk with department officials on these issues, and hopefully we'll see some type of reform on it.
So legislation, any things happening that are of concern or interest?
Well, right now we're looking at trying to determine how we can best, you know, for juvenile justice, for example, and how we can best determine and address those issues. Marquita mentioned the waiting list issue in House Bill 1033, and you know, we were supportive of that and trying to eliminate or reduce the waiting list. We're also looking at education bills. And 1222 was mentioned in terms of the education savings account piece. We're also issued a report on the Family in Need of Services process here in the state, and there are some recommendations to get some legislation introduced that would provide some positive outcomes for families who are in desperate need trying to receive services. And so we've been talking with legislators on those.
Those are folks who come before the juvenile court on the what they call the FINS or Family in Need of Services, and a lot of that, I understand, comes from the schools, right? And it's wrapped up with school discipline issues.
That is correct. And the concern is that once the youth are, when the petition is filed, that the youth are automatically within the court system. Yeah. And it's just a cycle that is hard to break.
And a lot of the problems are that the schools may not be making available to kids with special needs and those kinds of concerns.
Correct.
And there's there's a significant number of kids who are, explain how those kids are so vulnerable to the kind of criminal justice and foster care systems that are out there.
Well, I think if we look at the youth at the early stages, you know, a lot of youth who have disabilities, behavioral challenges, or whatever it might be, are not appropriately identified at the early stages, and it's deemed as though they have a discipline issue.
Right.
It's and so they don't get the services that they need to live with their family and go to school and get the supports to be successful. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a trickle-down piece. And if we're not identifying and providing services to the youth up front, mm-hmm. it becomes a slippery slope for them. They enter the court system, they become in the custody of DYS, and then they serve their time, and chances are, because we're not providing adequate services in these facilities that they go to for treatment, then they go into the adult prison. So we really need to catch it early on and ensure that youth are receiving appropriate services and assessed appropriately while in school.
We can't hold them accountable if they aren't given the kind of resources they need to confront the issues they have. So,
correct.
And we can hold them accountable and not criminalize them.
Correct. And I think that we really need to look at, as a state, and how we allocate our resources. And are we going to be building more bricks and mortar in the roads, or are we really going to be looking at how we can ensure Arkansans with disabilities or youth in general are receiving the services they need to be included and be a productive in the study.
I do understand there are some positive developments in juvenile justice in the courts with developing a assessment tool prior to making a decision about or a disposition once a child is determined to be delinquent, let's say. It used to be the judges waited until they sentenced them to do an assessment. Now they're assessing them before they issue a sentence.
Yeah, it's a positive step, and it's a pilot program that's being done throughout the state, and the judges are signing up and the Savory assessment and doing the assessment. My concern is that unless we actually put it into law that this has to be done, will it be done, or
right.
will it just be at the discretion of the judges and the courts?
Right. And the judges don't like people messing with their discretion. They like
Correct.
To impose
Correct.
The law, but not have any of that regulate them too much on that front.
Correct.
Right? And
Correct.
Then there's also, I think, the Juvenile Detention Alternative Initiative that's been instituted in a couple of juvenile detention centers in Northwest Arkansas that proved effective, and it sounds like they're going to be a few more coming on board.
Yeah, we have a lot of issues that we have to focus on here in the state. As I like to say, we have a lot of opportunities. But within the disability community, even, at the federal level, there's a lot of unknowns as to the impact for our Kansas with disabilities, even from the healthcare standpoint to the education. Who knows what's going to happen, at the education level.
Right.
So.
Okay. Well, I'm reminding you, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. This is live. You can give us a call at 501-433-0088 and ask us a question, or we want, or be part of the conversation. We're looking for folks out there who are impacted by these laws and would like to hear your comments or stories. So think about giving us a call. Again, 501-433-0088. And all for all you shy persons, you can send an email on at speakupar@gmail.com. Ellie, you were talking about paid leave, and I think there's some more economic security issues that are out there you'd like to discuss.
Sure. I just wanted to give a little bit more details on Clark Tucker's HB 1046 paid leave. That option is 6 weeks of paid leave compared to the other bill, which is 4 weeks, and his is capped at $500 a week. Depending on how much income you have, you'll get paid maternity leave up to $500 a week. And of course, any amount of paid leave is positive and has been shown to be associated with long-term health improvements for babies and mothers. And of course, the longer the leave access we have, the better. So that's just wanted to kind of follow up on that paid leave discussion. Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, I cannot imagine a family that easily leaves a young child behind and returns to work when they haven't had time to spend with them.
That's right.
It's really a shame that people can't bond and look into the eyes of this strange new soul in their house and get to know them and love them the way they should. So this is a part of the whole issue about prevention and being able to support families to take good care of their children and themselves. And we talk about family values, but we can't seem to give our state employees a maternity leave.
Right.
Are there any other economic security things you would like to mention, or if not, we can
talk about SNAP.
Sure.
Well, so just again, you reminded me of something else that a lot of daycare facilities won't even accept kids that are younger than 6 weeks. So that's families really are in a tough spot if they don't have access to that paid maternity leave. But moving forward to a different topic, there's some. It's kind of interesting when when I get to work with my other coworkers, because a certain bill falls in more than one category. There's a House Bill 1035 is a family economic security issue, and it's also a public health issue, and it deals with families who rely on SNAP, or what's sometimes known as food stamps, the kind of foods that they can buy. And I don't know if Marquita wants to jump in at any time. Sure. if you want to. But basically what the bill would do is further restrict what those families are allowed to buy, and base some of those restrictions on WIC guidelines. WIC guidelines are specific nutritional guidelines that are targeted towards women and infants. They have special dietary needs, and that's a targeted program that's intended to supplement SNAP and certainly not intended to replace it. So we are really concerned about this bill making it harder for families who are struggling to make meals for their families.
And I believe it's actually passed out of one out of the House?
Right. And so it's now on the Senate Public Health Committee agenda.
Is it going to be coming up this week, you think?
So it could. So today, Senate Public Health met, and we were anticipating that it wouldn't meet again until next week. But actually, they are going to meet again tomorrow at 1:30 p.m. So it's possible that it still could come up this week. Absolutely.
Right.
Okay. I want to remind folks, again, that you can call 501-433-0088 to ask questions. But I also want you to know that if you're interested in learning more and being on top of this and getting notices about when a vote is coming up and who your legislator is, that if you go to aradvocates.org, and I think you click get involved.
That's right.
And sign up. We'll be sending you weekly updates of the legislation that we are following, and also notices when critical votes come up, particularly if your legislator happens to be in the committee that is mm-hmm. voting on this. Mm-hmm. So I didn't mean to interrupt you, but do you want to say anything more about
it? Yeah, absolutely. And so, to Ellie's point, we've kind of been working on this one together because that particular bill does have a major impact as it relates to public health. Part of the rationale that we've heard for this SNAP bill is to reduce obesity rates in the state by limiting the ability to purchase certain junk foods or sweet beverages. And I'll just add too that, you know, there still has to be some defining of even what we would be considering as junk food. So there's a lot of questions even on how it would be implemented. But, you know, this is a really good example of when public policy is being shaped, the importance of really, really thinking about and looking at like the evidence and the research for what works. So if the intention is to improve obesity rates in the state, you know, research shows us, examples show us over and over again, really some smart things and effective things we've even done in our own state, that health education and nutrition education is key. Physical activity is key. And so while this particular bill may be aimed at reducing obesity rates, it kind of assumes that poor people are the only people in the state who are contributing to those rates, versus addressing some of the bigger issues that we have in the state just around health literacy and mm-hmm. people understanding good nutrition.
Right. Yeah, and to follow up on that, you know, what we know from studies is that people on SNAP and everyone else purchase items at the grocery store at roughly the same rate. The fact of the matter is that all of us in Arkansas could do a lot better with our healthy eating habits and with our nutrition. Another thing to keep in mind is that most people on SNAP aren't on it for very long. Most people get off of it in about a year. And what that means is, are we only caring about people's diets during that short amount of time that they're on the program? What we really need to focus on is long-term changes in public behavior that are lifelong healthy eating habits, not just when you're down on your luck and you have to rely on a program to help you make ends meet with your family. So there's a strategy of incentives that have been proven, like Marquita has been talking about, that would really do a lot more to improve public health.
Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Great topic. I've got a question maybe y'all can help me answer. Is physical education still a requirement in grade school and high school? I mean, do they still have that even?
It is a credit requirement for graduation.
Does anybody know?
Yes.
Yeah.
It is still a requirement?
Yes, sir, it is. But it's on... I'm just speaking off the top of my head right now, but I want to say it's only a half credit
in grades. So it is a requirement in our schools?
In grades 9 through 12, which means that...
I can't quite hear you. Can you speak up just a little bit?
It is still a requirement. Off the top of my head, I think it only counts as a half a credit in high school.
I'm thinking about back when I was a kid, and I'll just throw this out there, and I'll hang up and listen, but you got a great topic there. When was the last time you saw a kid on a bicycle? Just think about that. You know, I mean, these computers and these cell phones, that seems to be the latest sport is what's going on. I remember in the, you know, back in the 70s it was tennis, in the 80s it was jogging and so forth. So anyway, keep it up. It's a great show and good topic. Thanks.
Thank you. That's a really good point, and it's something that schools are trying to pay more attention to, especially in the earlier grades. There's so much research showing the benefits of play and physical activity for brain development in early childhood. And another thing that has shown really promising results are quality after-school programs. And that can span all the way from kindergarten through 12th grade. A lot of those incorporate different sports, maybe not competitive sports, but just, you know, fun intramural things like everything from kickball to softball. And that's a great way to provide a safe place for kids to go and get that kind of physical activity after school. In a place where they're with mentors and, you know, besides just getting the extra academic help, such as tutoring and things like that after school, that's something that we've been championing for a number of years. So you make a very good point.
And just to add to Jenny's point, you know, because schools are, I mean, in Arkansas and everywhere, are trying to squeeze so many academic and other things into the school day. That's why the after-school programs are so important. While it's still a required credit, there's certainly been some ratcheting down, and I can't remember the exact length of time, what it is today, but there's certainly been some reductions in the length of physical activity and how many days of week. And so while it's still there, when you know, more has to be done to squeeze into the academic aspect of the curriculum, those are the things that we tend to see go. And so, yeah, one of the great reasons why we champion after-school programs, because a lot of schools just have a hard time squeezing it in.
I personally have a child in kindergarten right now, and he only gets about 20 minutes of recess total his whole school day until he goes to his after-school program. And if you know anything about five-year-old boys, they need to move. And movement is a way that kids learn. So it's all interconnected, the health component, the education component, social, emotional learning, all of that is really important, and we can't let that fall by the wayside. And that's one reason why you need to get involved in state legislative issues, but also be involved in your local school board, because they make those kind of decisions mm-hmm. too, and let them know that it's important to have physical activity and just time to breathe and connect with people during the school day, so that it's not all crammed in.
I know I was a kid who learned by doing, not by sitting and listening. It's not only good for the kids, it's good for the mental health of the kids. Who
Absolutely.
Doesn't have a 2-year-old they want to go make run around the building a couple of times. You know, it's just a way to calm them down and yourself down. So it continues until they get 23, I think. I don't know. But anyway, it's good for all of us, actually. Yeah. All right, reminding you, we're sitting around the table waiting to talk about the things dealing with kids and families, and we'd love to hear any questions you have or any comments you'd like to make, some wisdom you may have. There's lots of people out there raise kids, and we all learn from doing that, and we could share some of that knowledge with some of the folks who may be listening. Jenny, is there something on your mind you'd like to get on the horse about?
Is there something on my mind, Paul? Oh, my goodness. I've been trying not to have a conniption because we're on the brink of something really bad happening as soon as tonight on the federal level. And no matter what your politics are, whether you voted for President Trump or another candidate, I think one thing that a lot of people agree on is that President Trump's nomination for the U.S. Secretary of Education is simply the wrong pick. We have nothing against her personally. I'm sure she's a very nice woman. I'm sure she's very talented and successful in a number of realms in her professional and personal life. But what worries us is she literally has zero experience going to, having children in, working in, or administering in public schools, period, at any level. And the Senate Education Committee, United States Senate, did approve her by a margin of one vote yesterday. And we're afraid that it could go for a vote to the full Senate as early as tonight. The good news is that there is some Republican opposition to her based on her qualifications and some other ethical issues that have come up increasingly in the past couple of days. But it's not too late to contact your state United States Senator to let him or her know, and in our case that's Senator Cotton and Senator Bozeman, let them know how you feel about this nomination and what it means to the future of public education when we have someone that's so clearly unqualified for a position of this magnitude. It just really worries me about the future of federal special education legislation, civil rights legislation, Betsy DeVos's confirmation hearing, she couldn't answer a number of basic questions about some very vast and critically important federal education programs and state education programs. So that worries us, and it's not too late to contact your senators on that.
Yeah, and if I can chime in too, I mean, from the disability perspective, we're very concerned about the impact it's going to have with her as a secretary. You know, no experience in the public school system, and you look at the charter schools and the private schools that have been around. Do they accept students with disabilities, those with severe disabilities? Private schools, we know, not so much. And if we're coming in, if we have a secretary coming in who's not a fan or not aware of the public school system, what is that going to mean for kids receiving special education services or trying to obtain those? Not only that, but if somebody is not receiving a service that's entitled to them under the Individualized Disability Education Act or IDEA, will they be able to file a complaint at the federal level, and will that complaint be heard, or will she do away with it? So there's a lot of concerns from the disability perspective of how education is going to be handled at the federal level.
Right.
Yeah, right. All right. Well, thank you all for putting that in front of us and our attention. And it's certainly a lot of noise coming out of Washington, and And we're trying to keep track of all of it, and it certainly is going to have an impact here. We just have a few minutes left. I'd like to invite any of you to say anything that you think might be important for the listeners to know that will be coming down the pipe at the session during the next couple of weeks, and things hopeful, things to be afraid of, or whatever.
So I have my little bills to watch list, so I'm just going to share one very important bill to watch. It's Senate Bill 196, and that's the basically the Medicaid appropriation bill, so it's the budget bill. And so it every year that budget bill comes before the Joint Budget Committee. And the reason that's so important is because it also includes funding for our Medicaid expansion or Arkansas Works program. And although it's mostly federal funding that we're spending on that program, the state legislators have to give us permission to actually accept that federal funding. So that's going to be hugely important. The bill is out there. And we'll see. It should be coming before the Joint Budget Committee very soon. And whatever happens there, it will definitely have a pretty significant impact on the entire state budget should we choose to accept, hopefully, or not accept those federal funds.
Because those are services that go to kids in foster care and DYS custody and all those who suffer from mental illness.
Right. And so just to Paul's point, just why I brought that up is because we saw in the previous fiscal session where the entire Medicaid budget was basically held in limbo for all of those populations simply because of the political debate on whether we should be offering Medicaid expansion or not. So that's what's at risk.
Right. And I also know, well, let's talk about pre-K just a little bit. I know that that was a big topic around our Kids Count Day at the Capitol yesterday. There were a lot of pre-K folks there with their children and interested in that. I know it's basically the quality pre-K, the Arkansas Better Chance, has now gone since 2011 without having any increase. We had asked for a cost of living increase at some point of about $16 million, but where do we stand with that right now, Jenny?
It's actually gone since 2008 without a cost of living increase besides a one-time $1.5 million increase during the last fiscal session, and that was thanks to Governor Hutchinson, and again, thanks to him for putting aside $3 million in his budget this session to dedicate for the Arkansas Better Chance program, which we greatly appreciate.
And that's additional dollars?
In additional general revenue. So we're very grateful that he's making that a priority. It's part of really his overall reading initiative, which he announced publicly about a week ago. We are still advocating for additional funding coming from the legislature so that maybe they could at least match what the governor is willing to provide. The cost estimates that we have done show that what we need to maintain the quality of the current slots that we have in the state would cost far more than $3 million. We're asking for $17 million on top of that three for a total of $20 million and are looking for many different ways that that can be achieved without raising new general revenue. So once you dig into the budget, as Ellie knows very well, there's always money available for things that the legislature wants to make a priority. So there are ways to make things happen, and we are working with legislators on both sides of the aisle to try to make that happen. And I'm still optimistic, but again, those legislators need to hear from you and hear how important it is for your family to have access to quality preschool and what that means for neighborhoods and for working families.
Right. All right. Well, it's Speak Up Arkansas, and we want you to speak up with your legislator. And again, if you want to find out more information about this, you can contact AR Advocates at aradvocates.org, and get involved. Get involved. I want to thank all of our guests, Tom and Ellie and Marquita and Jenny, for once again joining us. Arkansas Advocates is going to be featured most every first Wednesday of the month. We'll have great guests like Tom to join us. And thank you for being here. And up next week is going to be a discussion by the public policy panel dealing with de-incarceration. What are we going to do about leading the country in our increase in the number of people we are sending to prison? Something that could certainly put money back inside to prevent all that from happening. Again, this is Paul Kelly. Thank you very much. And by the way, if you have any comments or have some issues you would like discussed on Speak Up Arkansas, just send it to speakupar@gmail.com, and we'll pay attention and let you know when it's going to happen. Thank you for listening, and hopefully you'll be back with us next Wednesday. Have a great week.